The Gemara, when it talks about the whole sugya, the whole inyan of Pesach, it begins with that very famous Mishnah which says the following, Or Lar Barasar, the night of the 14th of Nisan, Botkim et ha-chametz l'or haner, we search for the chametz by the light of the candle. If this is the introduction to the whole inyan of Pesach, there must be something significant about both the Or LaBarsar, the light of the 14th, as well as this imagery of searching the chametz in the cracks, in the crevices, l'or haner, by the light of the candle. And this is going to be our focus today of what exactly, on a symbolic level, obviously we're searching for chametz, that's clear. On a symbolic level, what are we searching for? What is this Or HaNer? What is this? What is the chametz and what is the Or HaNer? What is the candlelight that we are utilizing to do our search? The focus that we're going to take is the question that we've asked in the past and probably a question we'll ask Mirtz Hashem in the future, because it's probably the key, one of the key questions of Pesach. Haggadah tells us, Chayev Adam Lirat Et Atzmo, Ki Lehu Yatzam Mitzrayim. Person has to see themselves as an obligation, Chayev Adam, to see themselves as if they left Egypt. Now the question is, how do we accomplish this? What do we do in order to be successful in this chiyuv, in this obligation? So Rabbi Lef, in his Sefer on the Chagim, notes the following in Source 2, as an approach that we're going to take today. We are exhorted that in every generation, each individual is required to see himself as if he personally left Mitzrayim. Notes Rabbi Lef, not necessarily Eretz Mitzrayim, but Mitzrayim. One need not identify with having been in the locality of Egypt and building store cities for Pharaoh, but rather with being steeped in one's own Mitzrayim, one's own personal confinement and constriction, by one's own Yetzer Hara. The source verse makes no mention of the land of Egypt, but rather it says, because of this Hashem did for me when I left Mitzrayim. And that's why the Sifrei Kabbalah relate that 30 days before Pesach, each night Hashem progressively provides each Jewish soul with the potential to redeem himself from the bonds of its personal slavery of the Yetzer Hara. And it culminates on the night of Seder, which also explains that a lot of the ideas we're doing today dovetail so beautifully with last week's shiur, with the idea of how we were in Egypt for 430 years. We weren't in Egypt for 430 years. Where's this count of the Arba Maot Shana coming from? So he says, perhaps we can differentiate between Mitzrayim and Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is a geographic place. Mitzrayim is a state of being. The word Mitzrayim connotes narrowness, when one is constricted, confined and limited, enslaved by his passions, desires, and misconceptions, and cannot actualize what his neshama really wants him to do, that which is truly best for him both in this world and the next. And that's the idea that Chayev Adam Lirot Et Atzmo, a person has to see themselves as if they left Egypt. We have to see ourselves as the process of going through our own exodus from our own Mitzrayim, from our own narrow straits, from our own challenges that keep us imprisoned and keep us distant from our godly calling in this world. I'd like to try to understand, well, what are these constrictions? What is this aspect of freedom that we have to see ourselves on the night of Pesach? After all, Pesach is called Zman Chirutenu, the time of our liberation. That's what we say in our Kiddush, in our davening. What is this chayrus? What are we freeing ourselves from? And how are we able to identify and characterize this redemption? So I'd like to try to look at it, perhaps, on two levels. The first is to be able to appreciate that the redemption that we're speaking about here, this personal redemption, has a tremendous impact on the public redemption, on the communal redemption. As the Rav Reis speaks about in the beautiful essay of Karvel Nafshi Ge'alah in Source 5, he says that every time a person has l'chadeit u'l'chadeish b'kirbo, we all have to have within us the k'miha v'tzipiya l'gula. We have to yearn for redemption. That's part and parcel of the Jewish soul. And as the Chidushei Arim says in the name of the Kutzker Rebbe, Likewise, we have an obligation not only to yearn for redemption, we have an obligation to be able to involve ourselves with the story of leaving Egypt. And the two really work hand in hand. Because when we look at the story of the Egypt experience, as we'll analyze very briefly now, we see that it has a lot of themes for us, both on the personal redemptive level as well as on the communal redemptive level. And we have to understand that when the Jewish people were enslaved in Egypt, they weren't only enslaved by the physical hard labor, they were enslaved as well on a spiritual level. They were known to be on the 49th level of Tumah, of impurity. And that's why we have Shavodat HaDam Yisrael, our job is L'tikun Nafsho, that we have to work on ourselves. And that is Mehaveh Truma L'Kiruv Geulat HaUmah. When we work on ourselves, we work on our private redemption, that has an effect on the collective redemption as well. What we're saying, and this is very, very important, is that sometimes when we say, Chayav Adam Lord, that's okay, Luya, Tzame Mitzrayim, we say, well, you know what, I'm not enslaved. You know, thank God, I don't do any hard labor. I choose what I work in. I choose, you know, how I spend my time. I'm a free person. So how can I even possibly imagine myself that I have to redeem myself? The answer is that it's not just the physical redemption. It's very much a spiritual redemption, as we'll talk about. And we have to have this yearning of being able to redeem ourselves from these personal constraints and challenges that we're in, to be able, as we redeem ourselves and long for this redemption, we then build the building blocks for the communal redemption as well. And this is what the Toldos Yaakov Yosef, quoting the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, said, Inyan Galus Mitzrayim, the squiggly line in 5, Kevo Shaya B'derek Klalut Umay Yisraeli. The idea of the redemption from Egypt on both a national level, Kach Yesh Mipratut Adam Echad, has ramifications, really correlations with the individual redemption. As the Pasuk in Tehillim says, Karva el nafshi ge'ala, I bring close my soul to the redemption. First one has to pray, al gulat klal, ki kodim shitpalel gulat klali, before one can focus in on the general collective redemption, sarich litpalel gulat pratit l'nafsho, one has to focus in on the personal redemption within each and every one of us. Now, my friends, what we need to understand is, well, what were some of the building blocks of the redemption spiritually of the Jewish people in Egypt, and then be able to utilize them for our own personal redemptions within our own lives, both personally, karvel nafshi gala, and then to ultimately be able to extend that to our yearning and longing on the collective communal level as well. So I'd like to suggest that there are really three elements that we find, more, but I like to focus in on three spiritual elements that we find within Yetziat Mitzrayim in the Sfarim that are very much relevant for our own exodus from our own constraints in our lives. The first, and that's why we'll do it the most briefly, is what we spent the whole shiur on last time, that's Tefillah. That the only time in Source 7 that Klal Yisrael were able to initiate and spark the redemptive process was through the crying out of the Jewish people. And we know when Klal Yisrael cried out, Lidonein, Sasema says, Al Sar HaNefesh, that they started crying out for the pain that they were in spiritually, that precipitated the redemptive process. And when we are in difficult straits, we too need to call out to Hashem. What are these difficult straits that we're talking about? What are, on this first level, what is the shibud? What is the servitude that we're in, that we have to extricate ourselves? So Tiva Agada points out, as it's well known in Source 8, Achen kvar arichu osfarim hakadoshim leva'er, sheshibud Mitzrayim orel shibud kol achad miYisrael. The Egyptian slavery is the prototype of the shibud, of the enslavement of every person, b'kivlei ha'yetzahara. in the hands of the Yetzirah. The Yetzirah, and the Yetzirah has many different dimensions to it. The Yetzirah is what pulls us to certain taivas, certain desires that are inappropriate. It pulls us to negative midos, to gaiva, to arrogance. It pulls us to kas. It pulls us to getting angry. There's so many different aspects of negative midos that are really coming from the Yetzirah that's trying to, you know, make us forget what our godly and spiritual soul is all about. V'yaduma shamu chazal. It was very well known to Gemara Kedushin. Lamed Amud Beis says, Yitzro shal dam yizkaber ala b'chol yom. Umvakesh lamito. Our Yetzer tries to overwhelm us each and every day to kill us. Hainu. Every day the Yetzer tries to find new and different tricks up its sleeve how it can overcome a person so it doesn't give them a moment of respite to do avodas Hashem. Umvaday shadam yizkaber al Yitzro ein zem mikochol prati. And the only way that we are able really to fight this Yetzirah, which is so overwhelming, is because we have a Kadosh Baruch Hu helping us. As Chazal say there, Imalei Kadosh Baruch Hu Ozro, Ein Yacholo. If a Kadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't help us overcome our Yetzirah, we wouldn't be able to do it by ourselves. V'achen kishizochim l'natzcho, hu neiz gadol k'mo yitzia mitzrayim. And we're able to overcome. We're going to say something negative and we stop ourselves. We're going to do something that's inappropriate and we stop ourselves. We're going to look at something we shouldn't be looking at and we stop ourselves. All of this is like a miracle of yitzia mitzrayim. But we have to recognize that the only way, lo haya sharli gael, just like in yitzia mitzrayim, we couldn't have been redeemed b'shum ofen by ourselves. Until Kadosh Baruch Hu gahal otan, lo yidei malach lo yidei shaliach. But Hashem himself came down and redeemed us, so too in the Milchemet HaYetzer. We can't be able to extricate ourselves alone. We need a Kadosh Baruch Hu to help us. So what we've seen, my friends, is very, very basic, very, very well known, is that we all struggle with our Yetzer Hara that leads us to do things and to say things that are inappropriate. We all struggle with our Yetzer Hara, which has a tremendous impact on negative midos that create this illusion that, you know, we're on top of the world, and we thereby, it has a lot of ramifications on how we deal with people, etc. How are we able to get a grip and a hold on ourselves? The Yetzer Hara is so great. Answer number one, and probably the answer, is to daven. Just like Klal Yisrael said, help! I can't do it. Vayizaku, vayinachu, they cried out to Hashem. We have to be able, in the situations that we're in, we have to cry out to Kadosh Baruch Hu, help me. I can't overcome this desire. I need help. It's so overwhelming. This is, first and foremost, the lesson we learned from Egypt, David. The second aspect, is the Tiv HaGadol of Gamliel continues, and he says, there's another aspect here. And that is, Ubitvonenut Amukas, verse 10, Nimsa Kesher Aduk Biyoter Ben Agalut V'Gula Shaya B'Mitzrayim Akob Yerdah. We find another very important, very deep connection between the Golos and Gula that was the Mitzrayim, L'Ben HaGolos V'Gula Pratit Shakol Lecha V'Echad V'Kivla Yetzer, that each and every one of us are in our lives. And he says the following. We know that Mitzrayim was a very, very difficult gullus that tried to really overpower us and that we were completely, powerless. And he says, nevertheless, Omnam Zman Rav Shel Shibud Kasha Var Lahem Ad Shisigua Sagad Dolazu. But ultimately, Klai Yisrael were able to recognize that all of this Shibud is coming from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is the one who had orchestrated all of the terrible challenges that we had in Egypt. And not only did he orchestrate these terrible challenges, but he also orchestrated the redemption. And he orchestrated the redemption in a way that proved beyond a shadow of a doubt to everybody that Hashem is the God. And not only is Hashem God, but he is someone who is intimately involved in all of our lives. And this is the idea in source 11 of the Zichuch Bikur HaBarzel B'Mitzrayim. When we take a look at the Mitzrayim story, we have to recall that the Mitzrayim experience was in order to refine us, which answers that famous question, why am I spending an entire night thanking Hashem for taking us out of Egypt? He's the one who put me in there in the first place. And the answer is yes, but understand that he put us in this fiery furnace in order to make us better people, in order to make us more sensitive people, right? We see all these mitzvot that have to do with being kind to the ger, yosom, and amana, the poor, the orphan, the stranger, the widow, is because, over and over again, the Chumash reiterates, because we were slaves in Egypt. We know what it means to be downtrodden. The Egyptian experience was one of purification. It wasn't that we go through challenges, and this is true on our lives as well, that the challenges that we go through in life aren't just, you know, random challenges, but these are challenges to make us grow, as difficult and as painful as they may be. These are challenges that make us be able to appreciate what life is about, and here's the and, which is not an and. It is the idea, and it is coming from a Kadosh Baruch Hu, tailor-made for me as an individual to become the best I can be. And just like in Egypt, there was this emphasis, both from the point of view of the Jews as well as the Egyptians, that you one needed to know that a Kadosh Baruch Hu was running the show. That aspect has to be, and this is idea number two, if prayer is one, they all work hand in hand. Aspect number two is to realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is orchestrating the challenges that I have in my life, and I need to have that cognizance and awareness of His presence in my life. And that's why He says, it's verse 12, so often in life a person goes through very difficult things. And people come up with all different ways and all different, you know, maneuvers. How can I get through these difficult things in life? Well, if I do this, then I can avoid that, and I can avoid this. And he's very happy when he comes, oh, I have a great idea. But a person is blind to the fact that all of these things that he's going through are in order to refine a person. That doesn't mean we shouldn't try to help ourselves and help others in difficult situations. But it can't be, I'm trying to avoid it. One has to embrace it in the sense of being able to learn from it. Obviously, go to doctors, take that aspirin, whatever you need to do. But when you take that aspirin, realize, why am I getting a headache now? What is going on now that I need to be learning from this? The kevan she no mitbonen and no masig makir shachen akol ba mitoy parach shmo. Omele ba'im alav chadashim karim nisfinot v'kshayim belief sof the tachlit. Only when a person, usually when they hit their wit's end, then they say, God, I can't do this anymore. We have to reach this level of Hashem, please help me. Allow me to understand why I'm going through this. Give me that ability to be able to withstand these difficult nisyonos. We have to bring a Kadosh Baruch Hu in the picture. And this is fundamental. One is tefillah, and two, and again, they're really one and the same. It's just like in Egypt, the entire Egyptian experience was in order to teach, Ani Hashem, I am Hashem. All of our individual challenges in life are to teach us as well, I am Hashem. Every single challenge we go through, and to the exact extent and degree we go through this challenge, is an awareness and a realization that Hashem wants to refine a person, develop a person, move a person beyond lethargy and apathy that they're in order to become the best that they can be. And that is why there's a chiyuv to l'saper kol anisim that Hashem did v'chol amar b'l'saper reitz of Meshubach. Because when a person realizes how Kadosh Baruch Hu was so intimately involved in the Egyptian story, ani v'lo malach, ani v'lo shaliach, we don't mention Moshe Rabbeinu's name came out only but one time. It has to be an inspiration to us that Hashem is equally involved and intimately involved in my own life. And when it means Chayav Adam Lord Datzo Kilu Yatza Mitzrayim, a person has to be able to say to themselves, in Egypt, one of the cornerstones to be able to leave was to be able to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu, do I bring Him into my own life as well? And that is our challenge that we have to do on the Pesach Seder night or night, as well as throughout Pesach. If one is tefillah, if two is recognition of Hashem, the third, and again, they're really all the same, but just defined differently, is tshuva. Very interesting idea the Pamei Moed brings, based on Yonasan ben Eziel and the Medrash and Shvot Rabbah. The Pasuk in 14 of Vayara Lukim ben Yisrael, the asterisk Vayeda Lukim, and God saw and God knew. What exactly did God see and what exactly did God know? So Tagim Yonason says Hashem saw the Tsar Hashibah. He saw the pain that they were in. And what does it mean God knew? He knew that in the innermost parts of their hearts they were doing tshuva. And this, as Fasema says, why does it say Vayeda Elokim and God knew? It's as if only God knew and no one else knew. He says, you're right. Because the people themselves were perhaps not even aware of this change going on within them. It was so inner. It was so sublime. This yearning to come back to Hashem that it took the 49 days of that transition between Mitzrayim to Mamad Har Sinai for them to bring it out completely to the fore. But it was a process that was going on beneath them in their innermost part. And that is what we need to recognize as well in our future Geula. That we need to daven to Hashem. We need to recognize Hashem is here. And we need to be able to awaken in ourselves tshuva. Tshuva is returned to Hashem. We need to have here Hirhurei Tshuva on the night of Pesach. Pesach, we know, is parallel to Yom Kippur. Siva Shalom speaks about it. Both begin with Kol Nidre, Kol Chamira. We're a Kittul in both times. And Lashana Babi Shalom. There's a lot of connections, a lot of similarities. But in reality, just like Pesach, just like Yom Kippur, we come out a Tshuva Meira. With a zichuch, with a purification, the white of the kittel on Yom Kippur, we'll get there, on Pesach as well, there's a tshuva me'ahava that we have to also come out of the night feeling this closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, awakening within ourselves that dormant, and each one of us is a different level of connection to Hashem, that I feel something different, that I feel connected, that I feel that I want to be able to take this connection and be able to move it a step forward. I'd like to share with us a story that I'd like to share two stories today, time allowing. The first story is in this new book, Touched by Their Faith, by Rav Yechiel Spiro. In my humble opinion, I don't get any commission and recommendation to books. I think that every person should read this book, acquire this book, if you want to be able to direct your Seder in a Sederic way. You know, people have said, you know, it's very nice to talk about last week, you know, the whole Seder being tefillah. But the reality is we have people talking about sports and politics and faith. How can you be able to direct your Seder? As well as how can you inspire yourself for the whole Yontif? And learning is beautiful. And if you're able to do that at your Seder table, great, do it. But if you have people sitting at your Seder table that learning is just going to cut it for them, even if it will cut it for them, I think this is one of the best. Rabbi Spiro on the Haggadah, Touched by Seder, is also phenomenal. And this work by him is absolutely also incredible. So it's a book I highly recommend, Touched by Their Faith, Rabbi Yechiel Spiro. So he says here, he tells a beautiful story of a pilot whose name is Gidon, you know, the short is Gidi, who was a fighter pilot in the Israeli army, very, very good. One who controlled his emotions very well, which you need as a pilot. And his grandmother, his Safta, went through the Holocaust, so he had like a drive or like an affinity toward learning about the Holocaust. He did not come from a religious family. His grandmother never spoke about the Holocaust, never spoke about experiences. He just knew that she went through the Holocaust, that was it. And he would read up a lot about it. So when the Israeli army offered some of the, you know, top pilots to do a trip to Europe to see the concentration camps, he took them up on it. And his mother said, you know what, you may be affected by something you see. Take a little Tehillim, right, and just keep it in your pocket. He says, don't worry, you know, I'm not going to need it. She says, just take it. Okay, he takes it. And he goes from one concentration camp to another, stoic as could be. Really, I mean, you know, some people just are been trained, or they train themselves, or this is who they are, to be able to control their emotions. And nothing really moves him. And he goes from place to place. It's fascinating. It's interesting. And then he goes to one concentration camp that was rather small. I mean, small in relative terms. They killed all, they knew, 85,000 Yidden, which is beyond your comprehension. The name of the place was Stutthof. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it right, but that's S-T-U-T-T-H-O-F. I believe is how you spelled it. And when he went there, something happened in him that he felt like emotions they never felt before. And he was drawn to a certain building, and he asked the tour guide what this building was, and they said this was a crematorium. But he had a very strange feeling. Instead of feeling like crying, he felt like singing. And it was like bizarre, like he didn't know what overcame him. So he took out his Tehillim, but like he didn't really recognize any songs in the Tehillim. And he was thinking in his head, what Jewish songs does he know? And he remembered as a kid going to Shul Simchas Torah, and they would sing Sisa v'Simcha v'Simchas Torah with a little flag. So he took his Tehillim, and he started dancing, you know, in place, you know, tapping his feet, Sisa v'Simcha, and started humming, you know, and singing to himself v'Simchas Torah. And it was like the most bizarre experience. As he's doing this, his phone rings, and it's his mom. And he says to his mom, you know, I'm in Stadthof now, and I'm having a very bizarre experience. And his mom cuts him short and says, call Safta. So he calls his grandmother, and he tells his grandmother, you know, I'm in Stadthof, and I'm having this very bizarre experience, and describes the experience. And there's silence on the phone. And she says to him, I know this place very well. I was 10 years old, and that's where I was in the concentration camp. She says, I want to tell you something, she says. The person you're named for, Gidon, my father, his job I found out after the war. It's not clear from the story whether he survived the war or not, that his job was to, lo aleinu, put people from the gas chambers into the crematorium. That was his job. And the story is told that one day the guards took a smoke break, you know, to smoke. And he saw the guards weren't watching. And he said to the other people with him, he said, today is Simchas Torah, we have to celebrate. And he had in his pocket just a page from the Siddur. And he took this page and they danced around it singing, Sisa the Simcha, the Simchas Torah. Gidi became religious after this experience. His soul was awakened. It wasn't by accident that he had the same experience of his namesake, his great-grandfather, who experienced this experience in this very place. We all have these moments of experience. We all have these latent aspects of connection to Hashem. Our job is to be able to draw them out. Our job is to make them part of ourselves. Bokim et ha-ner, orla basar, we check the candle, we check the chametz by the candle, we have to check inside of ourselves, what are our negative midos, be able to rid them from ourselves, be able to extricate ourselves from these things, and be able to work on seeing ourselves in the process of being able to dive into Hashem, the realization that Hashem is there, the realization that I need to return back to all of these things. Because if I'm not moved by the Seder night, then there's, as the Slobodka Rashiva says, there's little, I won't say this, but in what way are we better than Paro? He also saw God, but he didn't change. We have to experience this depth within ourselves and be able to be changed by it, to be able to bring a Kodesh Baruch Hu into the process of our lives in the most deepest sense. That, my friends, is level number one. Level number two, which I'd like to spend a little bit more time on, is the insight of Rav Moshe Schwab, which is a very powerful insight, where he says, Kayemet ta'ut mushreshet b'avanat ha-musag 16 ben chorin. We have a real mistaken view when we talk about a person who's free. Because really, when we're talking about leaving Egypt, and we got free from Egypt, we then entered into being the slaves of Hashem. We went to Mishibud l'Shibud. We went from the Shibud of Mitzrayim to the Kabbalat Olmach l'Shamayim, the receiving of the Torah. As the Chafetz Chaim would say, when people who don't keep Torah mitzvah think that they're free, they are so wrong. They are, you know, chained to their Yetzer Hara that leads them astray. Right? We have a choice, as the Chovos Levavos says in 17. Bavodat Elokav or Bavodat Yitzro. Who are you serving? Either God or your inclinations. But you, nobody is free. We are enslaved to our passions, to something in us. And really, the highest level is Shibud. It's the Madrigach Yoyona. Moshe Rabbeinu is referred to, and this is the reference that we have. Well, Moshe Avdo is referred to as an Eved Hashem. That's the greatest compliment you can get. The greatest compliment is not to be a free person. The greatest compliment is to be an Eved Hashem, a servant of Hashem, to have Kabbalat Malchut Shemayim, to have the yoke of heaven. So if the greatest level to reach is Shibud, is an Eved, so what do we mean when we talk about Ben Chorim? What does it mean, that we should see ourselves as if we left Egypt, that we're now entering to the world of freedom, but we're not free, we're servants of God. So what does freedom mean? So here, Rav Schwab notes from Moshe Schwab, from Gate 10 and 18. Mekorash shel kushiyazu hi b'ta'ut, ta'ut b'ashkafa al atzmenu. The reason why we make this mistake is we don't have a grip on who we are. On the, right? We speak about, I'm speaking, I'm doing, I'm walking, but who am I? So he says we know that a person is made up of two kochos, of two aspects, the physical and the spiritual. And just like the physical is a reality, so too the spiritual is a reality. When we speak about the shibud, that a person is enslaved, we're talking about the physical part of me. Either I'm enslaved to my desires, or I'm enslaved to Hashem. The I, the physical part of me, is never free. Its goal is to be an Eved. But we also have to know that the Mitzvot Ruchani, the spiritual part of myself, the Chelek Elokam Mimal, is not the same as the physical. The physical is world. The I always wants to get. Give me more. Give me, give me. The spiritual part of me wants to give. That's who I am. I'm godly. And Hare Mitzvot Ruchani Koach HaNotein. And the godly aspect of self is that of a giver. And this is how we try to emulate Hashem. Mahu rachu mafatah rachu. Just like He's merciful, you should be merciful. Kol mitziyut yotzeret kochot ha-shavot ha-mokara. We all strive to come to where we come from. We come from the physical ground, which is something that takes, like from the rain. So it wants to take the physical body, and the spiritual comes from God. So it wants to give. Now here's the key. The goal in life is to be able, like Adam HaRishon, that the spiritual should be able to have control over the physical. That happened before the chait. Kasher hakoach haruchani ya'ir bekocho machshekei aguf, that the spiritual can be able to enlighten the physical body. Kasher neshamashi zakavet sula tanhir gamet aguf, when this happens, that the spiritual is able to lead the physical, as yizkeh aguf lechazol b'mitziyuto shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then the physical body, mibsari, I'm able to see, echzo elokai, I can see Hashem. Kol zeh b'nagei l'guf, ha'neshama b'atzma, but the neshama itself, ro'eh tamid et mitziyuto shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The spiritual sees God at all times, because mitziyuto ruchani, because it's spiritual. Ha'shoef el mekora ruchani. Even when we're not able to control our physicality, our spirituality still is able to see God. But our goal is for the physical body to be able to perceive the godliness as well. Klapei ha'aniyah gashmi, 19, harei lolam u'nimsav matzav shol shibur. The physical is always enslaved, either to your midos or to your neshama. But when we're speaking about chayrus, freedom, we're not talking about our physical body. Because our physical body, the goal is shibur. When we're talking about chayrus, we're talking about the spiritual part of us being free. Elo shebazeh shoneh chelek aruchani shinui gadol in 19. Shekol matzava shal neshama ba'adam, our entire experience of our soul within us, hu b'bchinat shel chavush v'beit ha'asurim. The way he describes this here is so powerful. Our soul is like prisoners in our body. And we are completely at the whim of our bodies. And our soul yearns to be spiritual. And our body suffocates this yearning and hides this yearning and says, no, let's live the physical world. Let's enjoy the physicality. So on a Shabbos table, the spirituality wants to come out and say, enjoy the food for our next Shabbos. The physicality says, no, let's just stuff ourselves with challah. It suffuses that spiritual spark. You know, it's interesting because last week when I had this shiur in my mind and preparing it, I mean, got to the Shmai to prepare it, I was driving and I passed by a van that was a, you know, set on it, a prisoner van. And the windows were very, very tiny windows at the top of the van. And that imagery just came to my mind. Like, how much do the prisoners see? Just a small amount. And I always had this visceral feeling that this is our neshama. It only sees a tiny, tiny amount. But, you know, wouldn't it wish to be just let go? Large windows, be able to see out, be able to have the sun come in. And that's why in 20, the Kavanah B'Zman Chayruteinu is Chayrut Shel Shibur HaNeshama Klapei Guf. Shibur HaNeshama. What Zman Chayruteinu means is that the moment the Guf, it becomes an Eved Hashem. When the moment the guf becomes that its whole desire is to do the will of Hashem, then the neshama has freedom. Because then the neshama is able to rule over the guf, and that's Zman Chayruteinu. And this is what we have to understand. That when we talk about that Chayev Adam, that a person, B'chol Dor V'Dor Chayev Adam Lo Tetzro Kilu Yetzah Mitzrayim 21, how do we do this? When we leave the Memtet Sharei Tuma, when we get out of the Tuma that we are in, we're able to align our physical body to do the will of Hashem. And after all, everyone wants to do the will of another, right? Children want boundaries, they want control, they want bedtime routine. We all, our physical bodies yearn for structure. When our physical bodies are able to have the structure of Kabbalat O Mahut Shemayim, to do the will of Hashem, then we have been able to extricate Zman Chayruteinu, that neshama, who's able to breathe and said, this is why I've come down here into this world. And the Sfarim speak about how the neshama kicks and screams. You know, when a little kid says, I don't want to go, right? This is the neshama. It comes into the guf. It screams, I don't want to come to this world. I don't want to be suffocated in this body. And our job, every Pesach, is to allow it to breathe, to be able to take that neshama and say, I hear you. And I'm going to direct my life to a greater Kabbalat Ol, being able to bring Hashem's mitzvot into my life in a greater concentration, and in that way allowing the freedom of the neshama. This indeed, my friends, is echoed in a very beautiful piece of Lekach V'Alibu of notes and understanding Chad Gadya. In a sefer called Pedus Yaakov, he says that the entire Chad Gadya is really on this dialectic of body-soul and helping the soul be able to extricate itself from the body. Just to fly through this very, very quickly, because it's, you know, a long piece, but and I have others to do, but I just want to mention it. He says, in the Aaron 23, Hadam Rokav Mi Nefesh V'Guf, person is made up of the body and the soul. The nefesh is an neshama kadosha that every person has, the chelik elokam imal, and the nefesh wants to be connected to Hashem, and the guf wants to be connected to the physical world, and therefore there is this struggle of shikara yitzei mitzrayim. In the bracket of 23, he chayrus the nefesh b'masar guf, is being able to take the nefesh out of the body. The gdi represents this nefesh. The gdi is hachna. Gedi is an animal that has submission. That's our soul that is automatically submissive to Hashem. And the Zabin Abba is clearly Hashem, that Hashem has acquired with two Zuzim, that's the Brit Shmila, the Ode of Shabbos, the signs that Hashem has with us that we are Jews. So the Gedi wants to connect Chad Gadya, Chad Gadya, Gedi, who jumps, who, right? who wants to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What happens? So he says, the Chagadja goes through our lives. And he says, first, Va'ata Shunra. Shunra is the goof. A cat is the Chazal say, Sheino Makir Ba'alav. A cat doesn't recognize its owners, unlike a dog. And the goof doesn't recognize who its owner is, i.e. Hashem. So the Va'ata Shunra V'achol Gadya, the goof comes and eats the nefesh. As a young person, all a person does is eat, drink, it's totally involved in physicality. Then what happens? Chagadja, Chagadja, but even here, the nefesh still is yearning to come back to Hashem. Then comes a kelev, the nashach l'shunra. He says the nashach is l'shon of chibur, the dog representing Yitzhahara. And the dog joins up with the cat. And it doesn't allow a person to have spirituality. It just pulls it further with the cat away from the gavi. Okay, then comes 28, the stick that hits the dog, the stick, is Musar. Then a person grows a little bit bigger, and people tell him, no, you can't follow your Yitzhahara. You can't say everything you want to say. You can't eat everything you want to eat. That's a Musar that is Machnia Taguf, that subjugates the physical body. But then you know what happened? Then, Vata Norav Asarav L'chutra. Then a fire comes and consumes the staff. What's the fire? The fire is the Yitzhahara. The taivos in our adolescent, early adult years, our taivos are so great that as much as we listen, we say, but I'm sorry, I can't help it, I want. So it burns up the chutra. Then what happens? Water comes. Water is Torah. As a person grows older, they're able to have the Torah, be able to overcome their passions. Torah tells me not to do this, I'm not allowed to do this. Torah is our tablet. But that works until Va'ata Torah v'shata l'maya, till the ox comes. The ox represents gaiva, haughtiness. Now what happens? We turn our Torah into gaiva. Look how great I am, look how smart I am, and then I lose all the power of Torah. So then what happens? The shochet comes. The shochet is the shiflus adam, that we kill that gaiva, where a person recognizes that I have to be able to submit to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. And that's the goal, how a person is going to live their life with that submission. But ultimately, the Malach HaMavet comes and takes us away. The Malach HaMavet is that we can't obliterate all evil in this world. The Neshama is always going to be a Chavush B'Bein Hasurim. He's always going to be in jail, in prison, until Va'ata Kaddish Baruch Hu, until Kaddish Baruch Hu comes, and that's going to be the Tikkun of this world. I grant you, I went through this very quickly. You can look at it inside in more in depth in the Maariv Hakamos, but it's very fascinating how the end of the Seder is really about this struggle. Are we able to allow our physical body to have that stick be able to put us in this place, in our place, to have the fire be able to put us in our place, to have the shochet, who's a positive person, to be able to kill that gaiva? And the whole struggle of the Chagadja at the end of the Seder is that struggle that we're speaking about of redemption. It's the redemption, the chayrus of the soul, who's able to live in a body, who recognizes that no one's perfect, but at least I'm aligned with my desires, Kabbalat Olmokut Shamayim, to do the will of Hashem. So let's summarize what we have until now, my friends. Idea number one, level number one, is how do we see ourselves as free? Not that we left the land of Egypt, but we should envision that we leave Mitzrayim, that we all go through the Seder night, and it happens of Bodkim, or Labasa Bodkim, and Tachametz Lo Arnir. That's when it begins. It begins with the preparation now, when we go through cleaning for Pesach. You know, and be careful not to speak about, I've done this, I've done that. That's gaiva. Be careful that when you clean something and a little kid brings pretzels in and you don't just go hysterical. That's kaas. And you have to be careful that our negative midos don't overtake us. And we do this with simcha. And that to free ourselves is to realize that the yitzhahara of our passions, the negative midos that we have within us, and the challenges that we have in our lives, we need to be able to work ourselves through them. In what way? To recognize Hashem's presence. That's the goal of the Seder. Va'ata Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem comes down, recognize His role, daven, tshuva, seeing Hashem's presence. That is what's going to help us be able to overcome our temptations, and it's what's going to help us get through all the challenges that we have in life, which are all tailor-made, just like it was in Egypt, for us to become the most refined, best person that we can become. On the second level, what is this freedom about? What is this Yetziat Mitzrayim about? It's to enable our soul, which is imprisoned in our body, to be free. The way that happens is a two-way process. When our body is able to be, our physicality able to be, shibud, meshubah, enslaved to Hashem, kabbalat o'machut shamayim, then our soul is able to feel chayrus, is able to feel a breath of fresh air. This is why I'm here in this world. I'm here to not enjoy just the chalon, but to enjoy the chalon of Shabbos Kodesh, to have zmiros of Shabbos, to have divrei Torah of Shabbos, to be able to enhance the Shabbos experience. But I think, my friend, that there are two minhagim that we have on Lel HaSeder. The first is not well known at all, even though it's our family minhag. The second is very well known, as we'll see. The origins are very fascinating. That there are two minhagim that we have on Lel HaSeder that perhaps are symbols and models for us, are prototypes for us, to remind us during the night of Seder, one at the beginning and one at the end of what we're doing here. So that, you know, sometimes you can get so caught up in the forest that you forget to see the trees. Sometimes you can get so caught up in the Manishtana and the questions and the Kenedalach and everything that you forget, like, what am I doing here tonight? That you forget that there's a whole idea of being able to allow that soul to be able to be free. It's interesting that we know on this first minhag as an introduction, Rav Mindel, in his Sefer, My Prayer, in his introduction, speaks about 35. Our soul is truly a part of godliness and therefore longs to be reunited with and reabsorbed in godliness. Just as a small flame, when it's put close to a larger flame, is absorbed into the larger flame. We may not be aware of this longing, but it's there nonetheless. Our soul has in fact been called the candle of God. The flame of a candle is restless, striving upwards to break away, as it were, from the wick and body of the candle, for such is the nature of fire, to strive upwards. With this background, we can appreciate the first of the minhagim, again, not very well known. 32, Chagamatzos, Halachos, the minhagim. Rav Lieberman, a fantastic sefer, says, Yeshno agim ladlik neirok dolim meharagil, and it's called Manishtana Licht. That when we light yontif candles, people have a minhag to light a larger candle. Like, you know, you have those beautiful candles they sell in Bath and Beyond or whatever, Bath store, you know, those long, beautiful candles. And they call it the Manishtana Licht, Manishtana candle. The simple levels he brings down in the footnote, it's mitzvah lena laharbos neiros lechvod yontif. You should have a lot of nice candles for yontif. And also that you understand that the whole night of Pesach is Laila Kayom Ya'ir, that the night became like the day. So the more candles brings light into our lives. What's the point of this candle? So Sefer Kosel Shel Eliyahu, very classic Sefer, notes that perhaps it was done in order that people should know that this house has a Seder in it, that people would see the lights on and be able to knock on the door. Others hold that because the night is so long, then before electricity, you didn't have enough light from just the little candles that you lit for Yontif to last the whole night. So now that we begin Magid, Manishtana begins Magid, so you need to have a very long candle in order to be able to have enough light to read the entire Haggadah by. And that's why it's called the Manishtana Licht, Ner Shel Manishtana, because Manishtana is the Dan 33, the beginning of the Seder. And he brings down here that it should be a much nicer candle that's going to, you know, not drip and have the capacity to last a long time. If that's technical, right, what I just mentioned, where the minhag is to create light in the house, to create an environment of turning the night into day, which is a reflection of redemption, technically that you have enough light to be able to read by, on the symbolic level, perhaps we could say that the Manishtana Licht, if we put it at the center of our table, perhaps not near, again, depending on your age of your kids, where you usually light, but wherever you put it, when you have this long candle, and it could also be Manishtana Licht maybe because the kids will ask, why is there a candle in the middle of the table, this beautiful candle? But on a deeper level, perhaps we can say it's for this reason. Bot kimet achametz l'or haner. That or haner is to remind us of our neshama. the entire Seder night, when I see that big candle, the flame yearning to go upward, it can't be contained by the candle down here. It's a reflection for each and every one of us to say, look inward. That candle should be a model of our desire to move upward, our desire to connect to Hashem, our desire to have this feeling of not being confined as the confined candle, but be able to be free. And that freedom comes through Kabbalat Olamot HaShemayim, accepting upon ourselves the yoke of God's kingdom. The second minhag, which is a much more famous minhag, which everybody does, and the source of this minhag is really fascinating because it's open for a lot of different understandings. It's a minhag that's not found in the Gemara, it's not found in earlier sources, it's found in much later sources, and that's a minhag called Kosel Shel Eliyahu, the Cup of Elijah. I'll just mention briefly some of the early strands of where this minhag comes from. It's not my intention, nor is it ever, to do a historical reflection in these shirim. I'm more focused in on what we learn from it, but this is so fascinating, I'll just bring down from the Sefer Minhag Avotenu B'Yadenu. He speaks about that the earliest, one of the earliest sources is brought down, that there is a question. There are opinions that say that once you drink of a wine, so any wine that's left over is from a kos pogum, that a wine that has been used. So we hold that if you add more wine to it, so then you can still use that wine. So let's say after the first cup of wine, I drink the amount I need to drink, but I have some left over. So what should I do with the leftovers? Do I just dump it out in the sink? No, I pour from the decanter or from the wine bottle into the second cup of wine. But there were those who were careful not to drink the wine that was partly drunk from for the first mitzvah. So they had a big cup in the middle of the table, and everybody would pour their cups, their leftovers, into that big cup, and that's what they called the Kosel Shel Eliyahu. And some people said that it used to be drunk in the middle of the meal. That was one place where the idea of Kosel Shel Eliyahu came from. Another is that when you have Halach Ma'anya, so you want to prepare for this guest. So they had a cup for him, right? You want to fill the cup up for this guest. And which guest do we all anticipate coming? Eliyahu Hanavi. And that's why some people will indeed. There's a lot of different minhagim. Right? This is an halacha. It's all minhag. Do you fill up the cup at the beginning of the Seder? That would explain why. Do you fill it up right before Shemoch HaMatcha? Do you fill it up before benching? A lot of different ideas that are brought. That's another place where Eliyahu Hanavi, the Kosel, and they call that cup the Kosel Shel Eliyahu. In later sources, you have brought down that the idea of the night of Seder is the night of the Geula, the night of the redemption. So just like the beginning of the Seder, you had, and this is in the bracket in 38, you had, the Torah Shlema brings down from the Shemot Rabbah, the beginning of the night, the Lel Shimurim, you had the first Geula through Moshe Rabbeinu. So now you have, it's a Psukta Rabati, we now have, looking forward to the second Geula. Who is going to bring us the second Geula? Eliyahu Hanavi, and therefore the cup represents our yearning that Mashiach should come. Indeed, as we know in Source 40, there are five Lashonos of the Geula. Ve'elteiti, ve'itzalti, ve'galti, ve'lakachti. There really is a fifth Lashon of Geula, ve'eveiti, and I will bring you, which is that idea of Mashiach, ve'Eliyahu Hanavi, was the harbinger of the Mashiach, and that is a big question in the Rishonim. Do we have a fifth cup or not? Some people believed in a fifth cup, some people didn't have a fifth cup. So because we don't know, we pour that fifth cup, right? We don't drink it, we pour it. And as far as Seder 41, it's called the Kosel Eliyahu because we don't know whether we need to drink it or not. And when Eliyahu Hanavi comes, right, Tishbi, he'll be Metaris, Kushos, and Abayos. He'll solve all of our problems. So we have the fifth cup. We don't know whether to drink it or not. We call it Kosel Eliyahu. Having stated all of the above, that there are different, you know, reasons that are attributed to it, but it's a much later source having a cup of Eliyahu Hanavi. Let's try and understand symbolically what this is about for us in our paradigm that we've developed. The Malbim in the end of the Chet Eitz Hadaat in Source 42 notes that before Adam sinned, his body and soul were like neighbors, but they weren't interconnected. He says similar to, And Vaitanafsho Yucholali Pashemi Gufobuchopam, and the soul could leave the body. In fact, he speaks about elsewhere that there was like, you know, stairs going up to heaven. Like your soul could just go up to heaven and leave your body down here. It was like a two-story house. That's how we were. We were able to have this separation between body and soul. Like he says, Kimadregas Moshe Eliyahu Alav Hashalom, like the level Moshe Eliyahu. Indeed, the Sefer Pirkei Eliyahu in 43 quotes the Chasam Sofer, who says that when Eliyahu HaNavi went up to Shemayim, he went up 10 tefachim, his body stayed down on earth in a place called Gan Eden, and his soul went up to Shemayim. And says the Chasam Sofer, when Eliyahu appears as a person, he appears with that body from Gan Eden. When he appears as a malach, he appears as as just a soul. When does Eliyahu HaNavi appear just as a soul? At a bris milah. And this is another reason why the Sfarim say, and this is brought down by Rav Moshe Chagiz in 38. He says, why does Eliyahu HaNavi come to our Seder? He says, because we know that Eliyahu HaNavi has to come to every bris milah to tell God, you know what, they're still keeping your covenant. So the night when we celebrate the Dam Mila and the Dam Pesach, we celebrate two covenants, the covenant of Mila and the covenant of Pesach, right, the two Dams, B'damaya Chayi, B'damaya Chayi. So it's as if Eliyahu HaNavi has to come to every Seder and say, just like he comes to every Bris Mila and says, yes, they're still keeping your covenant, he comes to every Seder and says, yes, they're still holding by your covenant. And the fascinating thing is that if we take a peek at 47a, the Sfarim say that when the door is open for Eliyahu HaNavi, right before Shvoch HaMatcha, you should get up and say, V'lomar Baruch Haba. Welcome, Baruch Haba. Where else do we have that phrase, Baruch Haba? By Bris Mila. Right? When the Kvater come in, we say Baruch Haba to the baby. So it's very fascinating that both the Bris Mila and by the Leil HaSeder, we have this Baruch Haba when it comes to Eliyahu HaNavi, as if saying there's some connection to the Bris Mila that Eliyahu HaNavi has to come and to be able to witness our Seder observance. Now, here's the key. As Rav Shvadron notes in 45, you know, Ha'olam noheg li'achez chashivut merubah l'ptichat adel Eliyahu HaNavi. When Eliyahu HaNavi, the door is open for him, we pour the cup, the door is open, we say Baruch Haba, right? There's an Indian Sfarim say to sing a song about Eliyahu HaNavi, Eliyahu HaNavi, Eliyahu Tishbi, but to sing a song in his honor. Kol achad besetur libo choshev, ulay afilu eskele roto lubegakat. All of us look and think, maybe we'll get a glimpse of him this year. That's all of our mindset. But as Rav Senders points out in the Commentator's Haggadah, quoting the Kutzker Rebbe, Rav Mendel of Kutz 44 said the people make a mistake if they believe that the prophet Elijah comes in through the door. Rather, he must enter through our hearts and souls. This is what the night of Seder is about. Eliyahu HaNavi represents someone who's able to make that break between body and soul, somebody who's not confined in their body. Eliyahu HaNavi, the cup of Eliyahu, opening the door of Eliyahu, that symbolism is very deep for us. You want to know how to reach a level of Eliyahu HaNavi that be able to have the body and soul knowing its place so well? It's not just by opening the door, it's by opening our hearts. By being able to recognize that this is the job that we need to do on this night. And we know in 48, the Lakach HaLibuv HaGadah notes that Ikar HaNekuda Shalal HaPesach, the whole night of Pesach, is the Nekuda of Eliyahu HaNavi. Rabbunim points out that the Haggadah was written by Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi comes to each and every one of our Seders to purify us, and that purification happens through Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi is the one who's made to testify al Kedushas Kol Nefesh Mishrael. He's the Malach HaBrit. He is the one who's able to be able to bring out that inherent Kedusha in each and every one of us. That's the night of Seder. The night of Seder is Eliyahu HaNavi. It's a night of being able to take this confined candle and bring it to the fore. It's the night, as the Lekach HaLibuv HaGadah continues in 50, that whatever happens down here happens up in Shemayim. That when we open our doors down here in order to be able to welcome Eliyahu, who represents the Geula, the redemption, and as we are speaking about, and we've spoken about today, that the individual redemption is the harbinger of the collective redemption. When we open the door down here, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Poteach HaDlatos V'Sharim L'Chol Echa V'Echam Yisrael, Hashem Kivyachol opens the doors in Shamayim, and everyone can reach the greatest height in Leil Pesach, their Diluk below Shalom HaDraga. We have the Koch of Eliyahu HaNavi. We have that help, that we have this ability to, when we open the door, when we have the cup of Eliyahu, and again, the whole idea of the cup of Eliyahu, the wine in 46, is that wine is the only fruit, the only juice that comes from a fruit, that the bracha is a greater bracha. Apple juice is shakal, right? Apple is ha'ape. Because the grape, it's not so much the grape as what comes from the grape. That's us. Don't look at the outside. Look at our, what's inside of us, what comes from us, that greatness that comes from us. Be inspired by the wine of this cup to say, we, what's inside of us is greater than what looks on the outside. We have to be able to focus on that manishtana licht, on that ability of redemption. We open the doors down here. We're opening the doors in Shemayim. This is the gevaldic time of tefillah, both for our personal as well as our collective being, to be able to attach ourselves to Hashem. To be able to finish this geula process, to be able to really sing challah. Lolanu, it's not about us. Ki l'shimcha ten kavod. I'm able to extricate that soul. Final idea for today, in the time we don't have. What happens with the Koshel Eliyahu? So we know 52, Koshel Eliyahu, Navi Yeshto Hagim Shabal Bayit Mosgo Ba'atzma. It's customary for the Baal Bayit to pour the cup himself. What happens with the cup after you close the door? Yeshina Gushim Koshel Eliyahu Nervi Hayim Chalkim Lato Koshel Kolacham Emesubim. Whether your cups were filled beforehand or not, and you leave a little bit, then everyone takes from the cup of Eliyahu, which is our minag as well, and pours it into the cups of the people sitting at the Seder. Some just hold it, and there's a lot written in the Sfarim how it's like a protection, and that the Baal Bayit would sleep by this cup, whatever that may mean. Or you cover it, and you use it for the next day for Kiddush. And as he notes in the bottom here, that some people would do both. They'll spill out for everybody in the Seder, and then add more to the cup and use it for Kiddush the next day. And that is like a nice pshara. Symbolically, what does it mean that we share the cup of Eliyahu HaNavi? So Rav Tursky points out, once the cup 53 of Elijah is filled to the brim, the door of the house is thrown open, perhaps to symbolize or inviting the spirit of the prophet who was the harbinger of the ultimate redemption. Tradition has Elijah drinks from his cup, whose contents is then distributed among all Seder participants. Our individual cups of life may differ, some being more fortunate, some less so. If we remain totally distinct, we're not bringing ourselves closer to the ultimate redemption. When we drink of a single cup, sharing with each other both the joys and sorrows of life, rejoicing in each other's moments of happiness and strengthening one another moments of distress, we are then bringing ourselves and all mankind nearer to redemption of mankind. And really, the idea of pouring is the idea we spoke about of being able to give, not only to receive. The pouring itself is the ability of the neshama to say, I want to give to others. I want to share with others. And in a small way, 51 is a bit of Eliyahu inside each and every one of us. Whenever we're the bearer of good news, we are heralding redemption and salvation for those in need. And I think that this is really the imagery of the Koshel Eliyahu, the opening of the door of Eliyahu, for us to realize that our goal is to be able to have this imagery of redemption, but this imagery of specifically Eliyahu HaNavi, whose body, soul was able to separate and come together just to clarify and distinguish for us that there's a body and that there's a soul, and that we have to be aware of both of these components inside of ourselves, and we have to try to be as much as possible a soul-like person, a giving person, to allow that to be the dominant part of our lives. I'd like to conclude with a story again from Touched by Their Faith, to say very briefly, because we went over time, and that is, once somebody came to the Baal Shem Tov Yid, and he said, you know what, I want a Gilui Eliyahu. I want to see Eliyahu on nothing. So Baal Shem Tov says, no problem. Fill up your basket with a lot of yummy food for Shabbos and go to such and such town and you'll have a Gilui Eliyahu. He goes. He shows up Friday night. He goes into the shul. Nobody invites him for a meal. So he knocks on the first door he sees. It's an almana, a widow with a small boy. And she says, I'm sorry, I barely have any food, too, but you're welcome to join me anyway. He says, don't worry, I have the food. And he spends Shabbos. And all Shabbos, he's waiting for this revelation of Eliyahu. Nothing happens. Goes back to the Baal Shem Tov and says, Baal Shem Tov, you promised me Gilui Eliyahu. Where was it? Baal Shem Tov says, do the same thing this week. Does the same thing this week. The exact same thing happens. Was invited. Go to this widow's house. Says, here, I have the food. Let's eat. He goes back to Baal Shem Tov. He says, you know what? I've asked you for Gilui Eliyahu. Could you please promise me that I will see Eliyahu HaNavi? Baal Shem Tov says, look, okay, I promise you. Do me a favor. Go to the city and bring food with you. Okay? Baal Shem Tov tells you to do something, you do something. He knows by now not to go to the shul. He's not going to get invited. So he goes right before Shabbos to knock on this woman's door to spend Shabbos there again. But right before he knocks on this door, he overhears a conversation inside the house. And the little boy is crying to his mother, Mommy, Ima, we have nothing to eat. How are we going to make Shabbos? And the mother says to the little boy, don't worry. The last 2 weeks, Eliyahu HaNavi has come and given us the food we need. He'll come again and give us the food we need. Then the man understood. You want a Gilui Eliyahu? Look inside of yourself. We are, all of us, that ability to bring goodness to others. We all have the ability to help others in difficult times. We all have the ability of the redemptive quality. All have this ability to be godlike and soul-like. And that's the climax to a certain degree of Leil HaSeder. When we open the door for Eliyahu HaNavi, when we drink of the shirayim of his cups, the leftovers of his cups, we're allowing Eliyahu HaNavi aspect to enter into each and every one of us. To realize that, and to appreciate that our lives are like this confined candle. Or la basar, both kimeta, chametz lor haner. The ner is what we begin with. The ner is our focus. The candle is what has to be our mindset. That we have to be able to use this candle throughout the process. That the chavrus, the real redemption, is when our candle is free, when our soul doesn't feel like it's imprisoned in our body, when we're able to take our lives to be givers and not takers, to follow in the ways of Eliyahu HaNavi, and when we're able to have this Kabbalah's Ol, to realize Hashem's in my life, to dedicate myself to this reality, then I am ready to say, I see myself as if I left Egypt, and I'm able to live my life with this understanding that my body has to be meshubad, has to be enslaved to the will of Hashem, and in that way I taste real freedom, I taste the taste of the aspect of giving, the aspect of Eliyahu HaNavi, the bringing of the redemption. And we'll be zoche to bring the redemption and feel the redemption on the individual level, so that we're able to celebrate and dance together L'shana Haba, Yerushalayim HaBnuyah. Chag Sameach.